It's a still life watercolor of a now late afternoon. As the sun shines through the curtain lace and shadows wash the room, and we sit and drink our coffee, couched in our indifference like shells upon the shore. You can hear the ocean roar in the dangling conversation and the superficial sighs, the borders of our lives. And you read your Emily Dickinson and I my Robert Frost, and we note our place with bookmarkers that measure what we've lost. Like a poem poorly written, we are verses out of rhythm, couplets out of rhyme, in syncopated time. And the dangling conversation and the superficial sighs are the borders of our lives. Yes, we speak of things that matter with words that must be said. Can analysis be worthwhile? Is the theater really dead? And how the room is softly faded, and I only kiss your shadow. I cannot feel your hand. You're a stranger now unto me, lost in the dangling conversation and the superficial sighs in the borders of our lives.
Hi, this is Sheila, and we're welcoming you to our Artist Experience radio show this morning. We want to tell you that we put images of the things we're talking about on our Facebook page, and it's also a place we'd love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback, so please look at it while you're listening.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Well, The Dangling Conversation by Simon and Garfunkel. I know that that brings back memories for you, Sheila, I'm sure, because you had some dealings with Art Garfunkel and Queens, right?
Right.
Way back when. So that must be a very personal yes. song. And today we're going to have a conversation. We don't know how dangling it's going to be. But Sheila and I decided to do something a little different today. We just want to kind of have a conversation about art topics and topics in our lives that kind of have been aching at us, possibly stimulating thought. And this is something we haven't done, but we've been wanting to do for a long time. Sheila and I have traveled in the summer. And I don't know, when I travel, Sheila, I kind of sit down. I was staring at an ocean, a sea, and just mm-hmm. thinking about where am I as an artist? What about myself in the world as an artist and in this country as an artist and under certain global circumstances as an artist? And always feeling on the fringe, you know, always mm-hmm. feeling marginalized, always feeling at the edge of something and never really involved in it so much. And so I think that's there were some topics that I came up with that I'd like to talk about today. And how about you? And, you know, this summer, did you kind of think at all about what you were doing, you've been doing for so long?
Well, sure. First of all, I turned 80. So that's a big
deal. You look great, darling.
Oh,
you look
great.
Thank you,
honey. But it is a big deal. It's like a marker in my life. And it's not the end. But I definitely look back a lot. And I have a perspective that, you know, that gets wider and wider. So this
very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Wonderful.
It is. If I don't look too close in the mirror, it's great. But
well, yeah, oh, stop it. I said you look great, darling. Anyway, well, in the political and economic arena of this country. You know, I turned on the radio this morning and you're hearing about all these jitters in the stock market. And, you know, and then yet we have a president that calls it a strong economy. And a lot of people agree with that. And I'm just wondering, where are the artists in this conversation about the situation of economics in here? I mean, I haven't met too many artists that are, like, you know, banking in on selling paintings.
No.
I mean, locally, I certainly haven't. I know some artists that have sold some, you know, nice paintings, are doing pretty well. But I guess the thing I wanted to go, why aren't artists ever included in this kind of political and economic situation? I mean, we have some artists that are vocal, Robert De Niro, who we'll be talking about later. Mm-hmm. There are some artists out there that are, you know, screaming. Bruce Springsteen has had an air in this. And yet, you know, you don't really get too much talk about artists involved in the economics and the political nature of this. And it's troubling to me. I don't know why I find it troubling.
Well, one thing that I think on a really practical level is that art education in schools has been cut over the last, I would say, generation. It's something that's included. And so just regular people, they feel less and less engaged in art. And also, they don't know how to ask questions because it's something that they don't feel, I don't know you word expert, but they don't feel like they even know what questions to ask or what, so they stay away from that. I think this is general.
Yeah, and I think the comfortability for people to talk about art in these other arenas like economics and politics, I still think we're in a country here in the 21st century where artists are still the dregs of society.
Yeah.
That's how I really see it. Mm-hmm. I don't see that in Europe. In Europe, there's much more of a revered sense of respect for the artist communities. And maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, the musicians, the poets, the actors, and we're all on the fringe. And the fringe in this society means you're not involved in the money, the road to money, which is a power trip that we just are not seeing it in this country for the artists. Artists are definitely, I mean, I don't care how you put it, I haven't met an artist in the last 30 years that's like rolling in the dough, no, so to speak.
Or even just regularly showing and selling their work. I think, I mean, it's two-tiered. It's one, the superstars who have the superstar galleries, and then there's everybody else.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's it. And this is that's something I thought about over the summer, and it's just troubling. It's just, I guess the reason I'm thinking about history and how we're going to write this page, you know, 50, 100 years down the road about American artists, possibly, and how they could emit change possibly in a society, because we see a political and an economic society here that actually, I mean, I think it's screaming for change, and yet we don't, you know, get the kind of the grassroots ground to vocalize this in a kind of action thing. But of course that takes money. And that's where the government doesn't give money out. I mean, they say that they give to certain things, but nothing like the percentage of other arenas, which I don't really want to get into too much, but like the military arena and other arenas. We're certainly pulling back from the climate change, and the environmental issues are getting pulled back. And that's another thing. Artists want to get involved in things like that. I mean, the environment, you know, helping out. They've been very sensitive for generations about that. Yet, you don't get that in the conversation very much from our, don't hear about them. Because, again, they're just pushed to the fringe. And this is one of those topics we're starting off this morning that it's been an irky, kind of put in the irky murky category about art. Anything looming for you on so, because we have a lot to talk about today about these things that have been festering about art.
Well, I'll just say that my immediate thing, we went to Texas to visit with my son and his kids. And there was a beautiful late Monet show. It's his Water Lilies at the Kimball Art Museum.
Wow.
Oh, my God. It was incredible. And it's, you know, Monet is one of my first loves, and I left him behind. I thought, okay, I get it. You know, beauty, beauty, beauty. And seeing these paintings, it was an extraordinary show. And plus, with my granddaughters who were adults, seeing how they reacted, that was very interesting, because art is not a big part of their lives, but here they were, you know, with us, asking questions and looking. It was really a very nice experience.
That's a beauteous victory.
Yeah. Oh, good one. That was good.
That's nice. Well, I mean, you know, well, it's interesting because you mentioned Monet, because that conjures up a kind of a moniker for art.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And beautiful art, which it was. I mean, and especially late Monet, with those beautiful water lilies. I mean, he took it to the max, one of the first, I would say, abstract artists. And he was a survivor also. Yeah. You know, that's the other thing. And that's the kind of, we're going to come full circle today with that idea about pushing on and being faithful to a vision. And I think Monet is a good example of that. I mean, I think about, he died in, I think, 1926. I mean, mm-hmm. that's modern age. I mean, my father was, you know, alive in 1926. Uh-huh. So it was like, wow. I mean, you know, to be living, we don't think of him as a modern artist, but in many ways he was.
Yeah. Well, and then his very, the last paintings before he recovered enough of his vision, he had terrible cataracts, he had botched surgery, or they didn't know enough then. They didn't know how to really fix his eyesight, and then they got him some colored glasses to sort of mitigate what his color things. So he's got a whole bunch of paintings that are like brown and yellow, and they're the bridge, the Japanese bridge in his gardens.
Right.
And you know what? I've always poo-pooed it, because I always thought that the critics said, well, these are like early Jackson Pollocks. They were great. I thought, oh, they're just making them look good because they're not admitting that he couldn't see very well. But no, they're terrific. And plus, they lit them very well. They did something really special with them. So,
oh, very nice.
Yeah,
it was good. That's excellent. Well, you know, this summer was very traumatic for me in another way, and this is something I wanted to talk about, because this is a community radio station here at WOWDLP Tacoma Park. Is that I've been involved in a group of artists. There are about between 10 and 12, and we had a wonderful studio for 20 something years in downtown Washington, right off of New York Avenue, and we were thrown out of the studio space, a beautiful building, and right there behind the Union Market. And we were thrown out for them to build a boutique hotel. Now, I don't know. I thought there was plenty of boutique hotels here in Washington. And we were thrown out. It was very traumatic for me because, I mean, I work with wood panels. So we got thrown out. And I go by that building now, like, 3 years later, and nothing has been done to
kidding.
It. Nothing. It's the same, you know, shell that it was before. I left so much stuff because I just couldn't take it to my new space. And the new space, which was in downtown Silver Spring, which was an amazing space, they kicked us out too. I was on vacation on the other side of the world, and I got an email saying, you have to be out of your studio in like 3 weeks. Well, talk about, you know, going into like survival mode. So I came back and I was moving. I still haven't recovered emotionally. Physically, I'm barely recovered. My wood panels, and I had to take them out of the studio. They wouldn't give us any leeway. And I'm wondering, like, what are we doing here in this Washington, D.C. area? The artists used to have such a center over there by F and G Street.
That's right.
You know, in 6th and 7th, mm-hmm. by the Verizon Center. That used to be the hotbed of art, the arts, all the arts, mm-hmm. actually, in D.C. And everybody's getting kicked out. It's been happening for 30 years now. And they have to go into the other parts. I mean, Hyattsville and these are all great places, but they're being pushed out of the city because of the studio prices. I mean, the going rents for studio spaces are like $500-$600 now. And most artists a month cannot afford that. Now, there are some, you know, nonprofit spaces that do take artists, but I mean, that's like a handful, maybe here and there in the city. But artists are being pushed out constantly, and it's about a real estate issues. You know, mm-hmm. we want the money, we want to build condos. So they kicked us out of Silver Spring to build new condos. Now, if you've been in downtown Silver Spring, which is up and coming and very beautiful, there's a new condo on every block. Who's affording mm-hmm. these? So again, it goes back to this marginalization of the artists and the arts. I mean, we can't find a place to do our craft. And now I haven't had, it's the first time in 40 years I have not had a studio. Literally.
Wow.
And we've seen other spaces. They want exorbitant prices mm-hmm. that they're dumps.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they say you can stay a few years, and then, of course, they're going to build a condo on that. So it's this kind of revolving kind of mess that artists are involved in. I'm not trying to, I don't want to get pity here, but the point of the matter is it's part of the culture. It's the contemporary culture of where artists, musicians, they don't have a venue or a place to express their craft. Mm-hmm. And I think this is, again, I want to see what history says about this 50, 60 years down the road, 100 years down the road.
Yeah, I remember there's a building that's been abandoned for many years, and it's just by itself. It's not a really commercial area or anything on New Hampshire Avenue.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Well, I call that guy.
Uh-huh.
I call that guy. It's this fantastic, but all windows.
All windows.
He was so gruff and nasty.
Uh-huh.
And he basically told me, I'm going to rent it to you like scummy artists. Are you kidding?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what he told me on the phone. And I've gotten that kind of message from several real estate companies in town. Now, maybe a real estate person is listening, and I hope they are on the air listening. But it's all about what profit they're going to make out of this. And then in Baltimore, where I came from, there were entire buildings, fantastic studio spaces, in all parts of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't rent them because it was a tax write-off. Their empty building, there's a lot of tax codes that protect these empty buildings. In other words, people are making money by not putting people in the building. This is where we're at now.
Yeah.
And I mean, it could be a place for musicians to practice, mm-hmm. for bands to practice, and for just the cultural kind of connectedness of different art forms. And this is something that, I mean, maybe people are out there listening and they're saying, well, maybe I got it wrong, but this is where we're at. In other words, continually pushing the artists out of the scene.
Right.
And the artists are really, truly would make the scene in culture.
That's true. There is, I mean, I don't see it. I sit in the gallery I'm a member of, and how many people really walk into that gallery? Maybe two people.
A day when you're there?
Yeah, when I'm there.
Wow.
And it's so sad. You know, there's all this. It's a good show. There's stuff on the wall. Very nice. Nicely presented. And, you know, it's not even a thing of taste. It's who is even interested enough to come in. So...
Right. It's a kind of an interesting thing. Well, Sheila, we were talking about before the show a little something that's very exciting to me. Talk a little about your vision as an artist, because I've been in a real dilemma over the last few years about I do a series of works, and they have a very different look than another series of works that I'm planning. And a lot of people have been very critical of that. And the great late abstract expressionist artist, Grace Hartigan, who is a friend of mine, and she was my mentor, she said that was she didn't like when I changed direction. And she said, because she thought I was good at one thing, why try something else? Let's talk about that a little, because it's something that sometimes an artist, a musician, they look into some other area of music and they try something different.
Right.
You know, and they want to go. How do you feel about this? Because this has been aching at me, actually.
Right.
Now that I don't have a studio, I've been sitting back and thinking about it. Should I go in the direction? Because as artists, and I mean, this goes for, again, any artist, you can have 100 years of ideas in your head, but you know you're not going to, you know, get it for 100 years. So, because we live in finite time. But how do you feel about this kind of artist that kind of goes in different directions, or an artist that just stays consistent? And where do you fit in that?
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to introduce the show. Tom and I are having a completely off-the-cuff conversation about our ideas as being artists in this time. And this is WOWD Tacoma Park, the Artist Experience Radio Show. This is a very interesting question to me, because I know artists who have lots of ideas and they keep books and they write down their ideas. I have maybe one idea, and I'm so glad I have this idea that nothing ever gets in my way of, but you know, of like carrying out my idea to the end, and then maybe I'll have one more idea. So I'm just not that kind of artist, but I sort of learned in a certain time, and it's probably the same as when you were studying with Grace Hartigan, that consistency was everything. And it's kind of like, I don't know, branding. Like, you have to have your signature on your work. And if you look at the artists of that time, of course they developed from, you know, as you were saying, Picasso is a perfect example of something that developed over a long period of time and changed throughout his career. But I think that's kind of frowned upon now as being inconsistent. And I think that one of the reasons that I tell myself to stay consistent is that I can go deeper, because each work that I do in the same vein, I can carry it through to, you know, things present themselves to me that hadn't present themselves earlier. And then I can go deeper into that vein, into that place. But also, Tom, I mean, I know your work. And when you get into one idea, like your work with medicine bottles, with
prescription bottles,
I should say. It's fabulous.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because as you were talking, I was thinking about, in some ways, I'm thinking about how, like, my artist friends that have been so consistent, like you, in a visual look. The branding word is good, because I think it puts it in a very contemporary kind of way. I don't know if they thought about that. You know, I certainly Van Gogh didn't think about branding. But the point is that there was a visual look to the work, technical look, possibly materials look, and although I've changed the look, I think I've kept consistent in the theme of, you know, with contemporary issues of spirituality and where are we in this cosmos, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that I think is, I see myself, you know, coming full circle, in the sense of the work that I'm doing now is kind of very related to the work I was doing in the 90s. So that's like, you know, almost 30 years ago. So in some ways there is a consistency in the theme, but not in the look. And I think that's something that I'm troubled by it, because, I mean, I think you're right. The galleries are looking for a consistent look. And not only the famous galleries, you know, in New York and Paris or whatever, but they're looking at an artist that has a particular brand. It's almost a corporate mentality to the artist in some ways.
Right, like a trademark.
Ah,
you know?
Yeah.
But I have to say, you said Van Gogh. Well, Van Gogh's work, his major work, was over 10 years.
Right.
Now we're looking at our lives, which are very long, And of course you're going to come to the end of something and start something new. It's that's just the way.
That's a wonderful point. Yeah, that's a really wonderful point. I mean, I was thinking of Jean-Michel Basquiat. I mean, his his career was very short. And, you know, coming out of graffiti art, coming out of, you know, this kind of street art, he was very consistent. But again, his career was very short, so he didn't really have time. Even Keith Haring, you could say the same thing for him.
How long would he have kept doing that?
That's a really good point. I really thank you for bringing that up. Well, we have a lot to talk about in the second half of the show, and so we're going to take a little break and listen to some music about a conversation, and we'll be back in a little bit.
Hank, let's talk about your daddy. Tell me how your mama loved that man.
Well, just break out a bottle, hoss. I'll tell you about the drifting cowboy band.
We won't talk about the habits,
just the music and the man.
That's all. Now, Hank, you just gotta tell me, did your daddy really write all them songs? Did he?
I don't deserve no answer, Hoss. Let's light up and just move along.
Do you think he wrote them about your mama, or about the man who done her wrong?
You know that. Yeah, back then they called him crazy, nowadays they call him a saint. Now the ones that call him crazy, Lord, still riding.
Well, if he was here right now, Bo Cephas, would he think that we were right? Do you think he might?
Don't you know he would walk toward you, be right here by our side.
If we left for a show in Provo,
be the first one on the bus and ready to ride.
That's one to go. Wherever he is, I hope he's happy. No, I hope he's doing well. Isn't he?
He is, 'cause he's got one arm around my mama now. He sure did love Miss Audrey and raising hell.
I won't ask you no more questions
till the story's only Hank can tell. From the opera, and that caused his greatest pain. I love to tell you about lovesick, how Miss Audrey loved that man.
You know I've always loved to listen to the stories about that drifting cowboy band.
You know, when we get right down to it, still the most wanted outlaw in the land.
Yeah. Woo.
Well, welcome back, everyone. That was The Conversation by Hank Williams Jr. and Waylon Jennings. And in listening to the words to that song, I mean, we started off our talk today with a conversation. And the song was basically about, you know, how these musicians and their relationships are really they're either a saint or, you know, an outlaw. And so they're, whatever, saints or outlaws are pretty marginalized characters. So he's basically saying, as musicians, they're marginalized in this society, and over their careers, they get, people see them differently in the history of their careers. So I think that was like perfect for what we were talking about the first part of the show. I don't know. It's amazing. We've talked so much about it on the show about how music and poetry and, you know, everything is so related to the visual arts. And I think that I never heard the song before I picked it, and it's just too perfect.
Great. we're talking, you and I, about relevance, whether we are have any relevance in this time. And I want to say, I believe in beauty. I believe in visual excitement. I believe in a visual challenge. And when you're looking at visual art, if you're really looking, that takes place in us, in a different part of us, that, like looking like the Monets. Now, my granddaughters are not like art people.
Right.
But you could see how they met up with beauty, and they were really interested. And it's just something that it's like depriving yourself of music. You could live your life without music, but what a sad life that would be. And I feel the same way for visual art. It's like very sad not to be engaged
it's fantastic you just bring this up.
Yeah.
I think the key word that for me in your statement is believe.
Yes. Yeah.
And the believe that beauty is out there. And I was talking about this last night with some friends. It could be walking in the forest, you know. Yes. It could be looking at the horizon or the sea, to become one with that experience. I mean, I think that's reaching the sublime, and that's where art takes you to something else, the fourth dimension, if you will. And it's a perfect segue to what I wanted to talk about today, and in this idea that belief, and you could use the word faith. This has nothing to do with religions, okay? Mm-hmm. It's about a faith, a burning faith or a burning belief of what you're doing, you know. Yes. Whether you're playing a saxophone or reading words, you know, you're rapping, it doesn't matter. It's about this faith that what you have to say and express yourself is true. And in the truth of that is beautiful, and in the truth of that is goodness. And here's what prompted me to talk about this today was that when I was away last week, I saw a film that I had not seen in almost 35 years, and that was The Deer Hunter from 1978, which was an Oscar-winning movie. I think 5 Oscars were won in that film. And to see it again after 40 years was absolute revelation to me, in how I saw it then and how I see it now. And they really weren't, but it starred Robert De Niro, Christopher Walken, John Savage, and Meryl Streep. And it's a war movie. It's a movie about the Vietnam War, and a very controversial one at the time, because Robert De Niro is very outspoken about the Vietnam War, and he plays a combat veteran hero. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there is a little of an irony, and I could see the controversy in that. It was so controversial, he didn't even go to the Oscars. He was so afraid that he was just going to get nailed right up there, because, I mean, he had an amazing performance. But it's a provocative movie about war and peace in some ways. And in watching the movie, and this is, Sheila, where I really thought about, it's about an army, you know, it's about an army, you know, warrior. I mean, fighting in Vietnam. I mean, so many of us, I was drafted for Vietnam, and it was a very, very tough time. And in some ways, artists are soldiers as well. And this is what hit me. You know, artists in some ways are soldiers. They're not of war and peace like a combat officer might be, but they're of culture. They're soldiers of culture and communication. And I think that is so necessary in a society to live, to have these soldiers out there in droves, in just like an army soldier or a navy or you know whatever air force. We need to be out there as soldiers about expressing about where we're at in this culture, in this world. And I think that's the movie really hit me between the eyes for another reason. It's titled The Deer Hunter. Robert De Niro, it's an interesting film because it's about an ethnic enclave in central Pennsylvania. They're Russians who have assimilated into America. And a third of the film is about a Russian marriage between these two friends, and they're all Robert De Niro's friends. Well, anyway, but they're a bunch of American kids that are having fun. There's a lot of cursing in the movie, and they're in this church scenario here, but he's the deer hunter. Robert De Niro and his friends they go deer hunting. Well, whenever the deer hunter goes, Robert De Niro goes, and he says, "You only have one chance to shoot the deer. After that, give up, because the deer won." In other words, if you didn't get that deer with one bullet, of course, you know, you have a high-powered rifle, the deer is kind of at a disadvantage. But every time he went into this wilderness, the forest, which is a very spiritual place, and he went to hunt the deer, and he's in the clouds. It was filmed in West Virginia, which is very beautiful and very, very rural and mountainous, and with all these valleys and gorges. And as the clouds are coming down on the mountaintops, this church music comes up, this Russian church music, which is very kind of, you know, basso. It's extremely, you know, spirit, alleluia. It's singing alleluia, alleluia, alleluia. I mean, it's the same word in Russian, English, and Hebrew. I mean, alleluia. And he's in his element. And that's the key. He found his spirit and his faith to find the deer in the forest. And that's what we have to do. He was a hunter, but we're artists, and we have to find our faith and our belief in what we're doing, wherever it might be. And I think that movie, it's a very tough movie. If you haven't seen it, The Deer Hunter from 1978, it's an emotionally wrenching movie. I literally can remember leaving the theater in 1979, not speaking for like 4 hours. It's that emotionally wrenching. And last night with my friends in the conversation, they all said the same thing. You have to have strength to get through that. You almost have to have faith to get through the movie. That's how painful it is. Uh-huh. About these four boys, young boys from the same neighborhood, go fight in Vietnam, and what happens to them. And it's not a happy story, mm-hmm. to say the least. But the point is, the key deer hunter, Robert De Niro, playing the role, was the one that had the most belief in himself to get through the war, to come back to go deer hunting. And I think this is a great metaphor for life and a great metaphor for artists. Mm-hmm. Isn't this what we have to do? Just stay true.
Just stay true. Really, you know, and I wonder for younger people nowadays, it's different staying, because there's much more, I don't know, people need to sell work. Just like what you're talking about, losing your studio, you need a place to work and you need income. And I wanted to go back to one part, which about studio space, because I think that governments, even local governments, could certainly see that, chip in a little bit and try to help landlords to see the wisdom in having studio space. It's money goes somewhere, you know,
right,
especially,
yeah.
You know, where we are, there's tax money that goes in, and they could, if they saw that as a necessity, they could definitely do that and help the artists out. But that's one thing. I
wonder what the incentive would be for a landlord. I mean, they're not going to get the profit margin. What's the problem there? I don't know.
I don't know. It's, I mean, they know that art, that when artists come to a community, then the commerce follows. You know, I mean, that's true in Hyattsville. Now it's big arts community there. And so there is that, you know, that people move to where the arts are. I don't know why.
I mean, Tacoma Park I would say, a more successful, for sure, community in its arts, you know, vibe. I mean, you know, we have a good, you know, folk,
sure,
you know, there's a good music scene. I mean, historically, it's been that way. And so, I mean, I think Tacoma Park is actually, thank goodness for us at WWDLP here, Tacoma Park, that we're here because I think it supports, you know, art. It supports, but so few communities are actually like that. I think it's more exceptional. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that, you know, we have to have a kind of faith in maintaining that ourselves. Mm-hmm. In other words, maybe the artist has to work harder. I don't know. It's just such a enigma, you know, in the 21st century that artists are displaced and, you know, we're not in the conversation. Mm-hmm.
Well, why did we start this radio show?
Ah, thank you for bringing that up.
I mean, really, it's all about that. It's to bring people into the conversation. I mean, I used to come home from a dinner party and think, did anybody ever ask me anything, or was I able to ever get a conversation going about art? No. So we had to do it ourselves, and here we are.
Well, thank you for that, and I think we thank our bosses here at WOWDLP Tacoma Park every day, and Bobby Hill for all our help for the show. But it's a matter of, I guess, starting a conversation.
Yes.
You know, about art. And, you know, we have, we have places here in Tacoma Park that are having conversations about music. I mean, you know, we have the Rhizome and all these other venues here. But I guess it takes a little guts, right? It takes some guts and some chutzpah to kind of say, hey, I want to talk about, you know, us.
Right, you know? Right.
And that's another thing that... you know, in the old days, Sheila, remember you used to sit at a coffee house with friends and talk about art?
Yeah.
We don't do that much anymore.
That was nice. That was, well, you know, that's something, like, I was so lucky I went to art school, and that was what we did. It was like a whole community of artists, and we thought what we were talking about was really important. And then when you leave art school and you're all by yourself, like in a bedroom of your apartment or wherever you are, trying to continue that, it gets lonelier and lonelier. And so you have to develop a real belief in yourself that this is what you're really basically put on this earth to do.
Yeah.
And that there's nothing else that you would do with your life that is more important. And that's a charge that you have, and you have to fulfill it. And I definitely feel that way.
That's so important. Thank you for mentioning that. I mean, I know in some of the memoirs of some artists, I mean, I'm thinking of actually, Cézanne wrote about this a bit. It's this longing, this burning feeling to do what he has to do, and that's paint.
Yes.
Giorgio de Chirico, in some ways, you know, talked about it as well. And, I could think of, you know, many artists that it was just... That's what it was. That was it. It was an imperative. It's an imperative in your life to create. And of course, you know, musicians are the same way. Again, we're always, you know, making that connection with the other art forms. But you know, think about the communities of artists, like in the Impressionists. They used to go out, to a bar.
Argue.
They used to go picnic together, you know, on the banks of the Potomac. And then we had the Cedar Bar and you're reading a book about that now.
Oh my gosh.
They used to go and chat the American Abstract Expressionists like Mark Rothko, Jackson Pollock, Wilhelm de Kooning. Ad Reinhardt, and you know, these guys used to, you know, I know I left out a few, Franz Klein. I used to go out and, you know, talk about the art scene. The critics used to show up, and they used to, you know, nosh and, you know, kvetch about, you know, all this stuff in the art world. I wish we had that more, you know.
Oh yeah, but I have to say, the book I'm reading is Ninth Street Women, and it's really good. And it's about the women who are great artists: Lee Krasner, Grace Hartigan, Joan Mitchell. It's really a wonderful book in it, and it also shows you what they did to promote the men and how they changed art history for the men.
Yeah, they gave up a lot in some ways.
Yeah, and also gave them, sort of stood behind them and gave them their identities. It's a wonderful book. I highly recommend it.
So. And I know Grace Hartigan used to tell me all the time that, you know, that conversation, there was a lot of gossiping, mm-hmm. but the conversation was important for their, in sense of, I guess, survival, I guess,
right.
You know, in some ways. I think that's really good. I mean, we have each other here on the Artist Experience radio show, and there's certainly other artists, but I have to say, we don't do it probably enough in the contemporary world. And I think one of the things, and you mentioned the young people, is we have more distractions maybe than we used to have in the old days, you know, and 30 years ago. We're on most social media in some way. Don't you feel it's a distraction?
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. I'm thinking that it's partly distraction and partly economics, which we've been talking about, how to stay, you know. I mean, we had some young artists here, it was several months ago, and living in their parents' house, keeping things neat so that they could create a body of work. And whereas it used to be, you could just find any kind of space to have a studio in, and it didn't have to have heat.
Right.
I mean, my studio for years was my garage, and I it was terrible. I insulated it. And I put in some skylights, and there was a coal stove, and it was filthy and freezing. And that was really,
I remember those days, too.
Yeah, but it didn't, you know, and people would come and see me all the time. They were fascinated that I was an artist. I don't have that anymore. I don't have anybody thinking, let's go see Sheila and see what she's doing. That doesn't happen.
It's more of a cloistered life in some ways.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's a very, and that's where the faith and the belief in what you do, you know. Being in a studio space with 10 artists has an advantage in the sense that, you know, one will come by and say, hey, can I, you know, poke my head in and see what you're doing?
Ooh,
and then I would
nice.
Say, I actually was, I enjoyed that. I have to say, I wasn't as, being that so, it was so hard to get into the studio space with other responsibilities that I didn't bother, you know, I wouldn't say it was a bother, but I didn't kind of inflict my kind of time on them. But to see other people working simultaneously was very healthful.
Very
that was
nice.
A very healthful thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is the first time we've ever done this, Sheila, and we've been here from the beginning at the Artist Experience Radio show, and here at WWDLP Tacoma Park. And I think, you know, this is something we maybe should do more often, about the things that are aching us about art. And I think it's aching a lot of other people out there.
It has to be.
I hope our listeners are thinking about these topics. You know, and you have artist friends, you're an artist mm-hmm. yourself, and things like that. But do you have anything to kind of close? Because we're ending.
Sure. Well, I want to say that I have some lifelong friends who were artists with me from the beginning who are still artists. And I think we feel like very privileged. No matter how hard it's been, we all found a way to keep going. And those of us who remain to be artists, we can feel very proud that we have continued and not let life get us, you know,
off our path. Yeah.
And it feels like swimming upstream. you know, especially when I was younger and I was had my kids and all of the ways to be distracted. And I would be in my studio with the car keys in my hand, getting ready to do my carpool and late because I had to do this thing on my painting before I left. And my kids were always the last kids left on the playground waiting for me. It was terrible, really. But it was such a driving thing. And now my life is easy and I have a great studio and it's wonderful, but I can feel a real sense of accomplishment, not, well, maybe in the work, but also in the fact that I have done this.
Ah, that's wonderful. Yeah. And it's also about attitude, and you have had a positive attitude, even though you were going and swimming upstream. And I think that's a great way to end the show, that we got to stay positive amid the political, economic situations that we have here, and we hope you've enjoyed our dangling conversation here, and we hope to enjoy the show, and we've got to kind of talk about our next show.
Oh,
Sheila,
I'd love to talk about our next show. Okay, so there is a woman here in Tacoma Park who is a puppeteer, and she is fascinating. We went to her apartment
and studio
and we learned a lot about her work, and so we are going to have her come in to the studio in 2 weeks, and she has so much to say about the whole world of puppets that I was really clueless about.
Totally clueless.
Very deep and far-ranging, and it's a world of puppeteers. So we're going to be so fortunate to have her come into the studio.
I know, it's going to be a great show. And we invite you to go onto our great website and see the program schedule. It's a fantastic schedule, and it really kind of addresses this great community here in Tacoma Park. Experience art and the visual in everything you do. And thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Where we